Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Top 4 Tuesday, college football playoff rankings coming out tonight, so keep an eye on that as we expect very little changes in that situation this evening. I would assume Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, LSU, probably in the same order as last week. The thing to keep an eye on, of course, is going to be Oklahoma, one loss Alabama, one loss Utah, maybe Minnesota and Baylor mixed in at the back end of that list. The question is going to be, is there a path for Alabama to get there? And with Oregon losing, now you got to root for Oregon to beat Utah in the Pac-12 title game if you're a fan of Alabama. You need LSU to beat Georgia in the SEC title game. You needed Ohio State to beat Penn State. You got that. So a couple of things Alabama needed took place this past weekend. So they, if they still are sitting at 5 tonight ahead of Oklahoma and Utah, they will only gain ground with a win over Auburn. So keep an eye on that. We'll have a full breakdown, of course, coming up tomorrow on the show as we break down all of the rankings. However, the Preds win last night 3-2 in shootout fashion. A huge win for the Nashville Predators. After a terrible losing streak, losing 8 out of 9, losing whatever it was, 6 straight, you come back and you beat St. Louis, you hold on for dear life after a great first period on Saturday. You basically do the same thing. You score twice in the first period, you get an early lead, and then you hold on for dear life as the game goes along. It ends up getting tied, goes into overtime, of course. And then the man that wins the game, Daniel Carr, called up to play on the roster, because Victor Arvidsson is now out 4 to 6 weeks, if you've been under a rock, after a very dirty play from Robert Bortuzzo on Saturday night, cross-checking Victor Arvidsson down into the ground, what looks like his legs getting caught up underneath him. Again, we can only speculate lower body injury, but it looks like both of his knees get caught up underneath him, and he kind of was messing with the knee as he skated off. So, again, pure speculation, no real information there. But Kyle Turris didn't play last night. And Peter Laviolette's interaction after the game when it comes to the Kyle Turris situation is not exactly what the fans want to hear. It's not exactly what the fans want to hear. They need answers. They deserve answers about why Kyle Turris is sitting on the bench. He's the third highest paid offensive player on this roster. He's making $6 million a year, and the Preds signed him to a long-term deal. The media is doing its job, representing the fans, asking questions about why Kyle Turris, the $6 million guy who you gave up two prospects and draft picks to get in a trade and then gave a huge contract to, has been a healthy scratch now that Victor Arvidsson is hurt. And this was Peter Laviolette's response.
Peter, why does it seem that Kyle Turris has fallen out of favor with you?
I just made a lineup decision tonight, Adam.
May follow up on that. In the past week, the team has recalled two league. They've been putting the lineup over him, so I guess you can understand why it might be perceived that way.
I answered that question already.
Does he have a future?
Yeah, I mean, Kyle's part of our team.
Cool, Coach. Cool. Here's the deal. There are two major discussions to be had here with Kyle Turris. One is, according to Peter Laviolette, who gives me the best chance to win on any given night? That's one conversation. And last night, Daniel Carr scored the game-winning goal in the shootout. Daniel Carr was active in the front of the net, had a couple of scoring chances. I don't know if Kyle Turris gives this team a better chance to win. I'm not the coach. I'm not in the locker room. But Peter Laviolette has the right to make that decision, and they won two games. They beat St. Louis twice. Mm-hmm. Let's see if it continues. But he did it with Daniel Carr and Matthew Olivier. He did it by getting more physical. He did it by bringing up bigger, tougher, more net front presence. And frankly, they've been in front of the net better against St. Louis than they had the previous couple of weeks. That's one discussion we can have. Mm-hmm. Only Peter Laviolette knows that. The other discussion is, what is going on with Kyle Turris, and what is the future of Kyle Turris, and why do you insist, Peter Laviolette, on putting a giant spotlight on this issue by being so... I don't even know what the right word is. It's not standoffish. That's not what he's doing here. But he's just...
He's been elusive in answering the question.
Or not answering the question.
Or not answering the question. He's
Is he not casting a larger spotlight on the issue by answering it the way he's answering
sort
it?
He's dodging it in a way. He's being coy about the whole thing. He doesn't... But, I mean, that's Peter. He does it with injuries. He's doing it now with Kyle Turris, but like you said, it only heightens, you know, whatever speculation is out there. It feeds sort of the beast of, you know, will Kyle Turris be on this team after the trade deadline? All signs are pointing to he will not be a part of this team.
Or they're at least trying that.
Exactly. Or they're at least trying to move on from him. But if you want to move on from him, you as a head coach would want to put out as much good film on a player as possible, right? So it would behoove him to play him, you know, because if you're trying to trade him,
why aren't you playing him? He needs to be on the ice.
Exactly. He needs to be on the ice to show his worth.
And if he's that bad, quote unquote bad, which again, at that point, if you're Kyle Turris, I think there's some ownership in all of this. Uh-huh. I think everybody deserves a little bit of blame here. I think David Poile was wrong to have given him the contract. I think that's there needs to be some blame. David Poile can do no wrong, but this was a decision that we will be able to question for a while. It's a huge contract. You gave it to him almost automatically before he came to town. He had a great first couple of months of the season and has largely been a non-factor for this team. Now, he had some nice moments this season, but then Peter Laviolette has benched him and healthy scratched him. And Peter, like, all you can read, because you will not give us answers, coach, because the head coach of the team mm-hmm. is choosing to be standoffish about this and play this the way he's playing it, which, again, is his prerogative.
Exactly.
And to your point, Derek, kind of the way he is. If you're going to be like that, then what's going to happen? We're all going to speculate, and we're going to ask questions of ourselves. And the question I ask is, well, if Kyle Turris doesn't help you win, why in the world did he get a $36 million contract? Why in the world did David Poile and the front office not know, and I'm assuming they did, and we don't know what Peter Laviolette's feelings were at the time. But and then so there's some blame to go around there with how Laviolette's handling this, because in my opinion, he's casting a giant spotlight on it. Now the fans are begging media to ask these questions. Adam Vingan asks a great question, which is, you've called up two players from the AHL instead of playing Kyle Turris. What is going on? And you're not giving us a single bit of insight. Just say, hey, he doesn't play in front of the net very well right now. We're working on getting him into a more physical style of play, and we wanted to try somebody different. Like, just give us something. And you're not going to give us anything. And if you're going to do that, then we get to sit up here and speculate and ask questions. And the only way you can trade him is if he's on the ice showing some value.
That's what I think.
I don't know how you trade a guy who's being healthy scratched every night when you've got an injury to one of your top scoring forwards in Victor Arvidsson. And then Kyle Turris has to take some of the blame as well, because if he's not playing up to his standards, then that's on him, right? So
no, you're right.
Eventually there's blame to kind of go around to everybody here.
That's eventually, you know, if you're not trying to showcase the sort of the commodity or the asset or whatever, if you're not willing to showcase it to show everyone else, hey, listen, this is what you will be getting, you know, if you indeed make the trade. Because Kyle Turris, you know, for what it's worth, he was playing well based upon how he did last year. He started the season off playing well. And we talked about it. We were like, man, he looks different than what he did last season.
And he has endeared himself to Predators fans off the ice. He's mm-hmm. a big part. He does a lot of work in the community. Again, none of this stuff may matter when you evaluate a guy on the ice. I get it.
Exactly.
But he's a good character guy, and he's good off the ice, and he's handled largely all of this in stride. So mm-hmm. there is some of this that is Laviolette being fair to Kyle Turris. Well, if he does not help you win, and you think you can win better and more with Daniel Carr in the lineup,
well, he's showing you he can't help you win.
And Daniel Carr just won you the game last night. Again, it's hard to then doubt Peter Laviolette's thought process here, which is, I need to win every night.
Well, listen,
I need to figure out a way to win.
You bring up Santini. Is it Santini?
Steven Santini was brought up, and he didn't play last
exactly.
night.
Exactly. And you bring up another guy, then you have Carr. All the while, Turris is sitting there. Well, you're telling us he can't help you win.
Right.
I mean, whether that is the case or not, what you're telling everyone that is everyone that is speculating or wondering what's going on, well, you're telling them he can't help me win.
And I would assume we would not think that Peter Laviolette would do anything on purpose to hurt his team.
Yeah.
That sounds stupid, especially a team that's struggling. So mm-hmm. that seems irrational. I just think there's all it's doing by not answering questions is mm-hmm. creating more questions.
Exactly.
And you're putting a bigger spotlight now on yourself, on Kyle Turris, on the contract that David Poile gave him. Everything is now under a microscope, more so because he's not playing. And does he deserve to be treated that way? Is that inappropriate? The story's out of Toronto with the way Coach Babcock was treating Mitch Marner or whatever. Like, it's nothing close to that. So let's not go crazy here. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Carr won them the game last night. So there's one conversation about, does he help you win? The other conversation is, what do you do with him, and how do you handle the situation? And it doesn't sound like – I mean, it doesn't feel like anyone's handling it particularly great right now, although Kyle Turris, for what it's worth, even as depressed as he sounds, is handling it relatively well. Relatively well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll continue this conversation. Your phone calls. What do you do with Kyle Turris when we return right here on Morning Drive? NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30 a.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Indianapolis Colts. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesaling, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. We will talk with Chris Mason coming up in just a few minutes more about this Kyle Turris thing. I'm just curious how it all ends. And if in fact Kyle Turris doesn't help you win games, and that's up to Peter Laviolette and the coaching staff, and it may be true because they've won two games without him, including an injury to Victor Arvidsson, and they picked up four incredibly mm-hmm. important points against the number one first place and defending champ St. Louis mm-hmm. Blues. I just wonder, you know, if they're offering to pay some of the contract to get rid of him, like, at what point is he just an untradeable commodity? And what do you do, and how does it end? How do Preds fans take it if he is traded for nothing just to get rid of the salary? How do Preds fans take that? Because that means you gave up, what, Kamenev and Sam Girard
yeah.
To go get this guy. You gave him a huge contract, and what do you got to show for it?
Well, I mean, you got to get something back. But if you're not willing to play him, to continue to showcase him as a commodity for another team, then, you know, what is your other recourse of action? Well, it's to do what we said the Miami Dolphins did. Well, pay half of the salary, you know, recoup half of the salary. And maybe if you want to trade Kyle Turris, maybe because you're not willing to play him. You're not playing him.
I think you have to play him.
I know you have to, but I'm saying you're not playing him. So how much, if you're not playing a guy, what is then his trade value? If you're not showing the league that, hey, listen, this guy, he's a good player. He just doesn't fit what we're doing. What can we get in return? If you're not willing to play him, then you can't ask someone to make a trade with you if you yourself is not willing to play the player.
Yeah, and listen, David Poile has largely been a perfect general manager for this organization. Mm-hmm. It's hard to criticize much of anything that he's done. John Robinson has done an excellent job rebuilding the Titans roster and getting them back to the place where they are competitive. In fact, having to make tough coaching decisions.
Mm-hmm.
David Poile's had to make a tough coaching decision. These guys can be very, very good at their jobs, and then we can still be critical of something that they did
exactly.
wrong. And it is very clear and obvious that the maneuver to acquire Kyle Turris and then pay him a massive salary wasn't the right move. Mm-hmm. Whether it's system, whether it's fit, whether it's the coach and him don't get along, whether he's regressed as a player, any possible excuse, because obviously the coaching staff's not telling us anything right now. It was obviously an error to give Kyle Turris that big of a contract. And that is where David Poile carries some of the blame, because as perfect as he nearly is all the time, it's okay for us to say, you know what, that one was a miss. John Robinson missed on so many defensive linemen and offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
How many contracts has he given out? Sylvester Williams, Benny Logan, you know, Josh Klein. Like, he gave out contracts that just had no business being given out.
Exactly.
He drafted Kevin Dodd with, like, the first pick of the second round. Terrible draft pick. We, you know, Corey Davis is, I think, a good player. Probably would be better served somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nobody really believes that was a great draft pick. even if I really like the player, and I don't think he's going to get a fair shake here.
No.
Guys, it's okay for GMs aren't going to bat 1,000. But the way the coach is handling this, and Peter Laviolette, and I know we're sort of beating a dead horse here, but if Peter Laviolette just gave us some information, some insight, it would at least take some of the spotlight off the situation. By handling it this way, in my opinion, he is adding to the situation and making it larger than it really needs to be.
Well, we are only talking about what many are wondering
right.
and speculating.
We're paying. He's the third highest paid offensive player on the team.
It's not like we, you know, us, you and I are the only people that are talking about this.
No, this is Preds fans.
I mean, Vingan.
This is the fans.
Asked the question yesterday. Well, right. What's going on with Kyle Turris? So we are not the only people that are asking this question. So
the fans deserve to know and
absolutely.
Want to know.
So it's safe to assume that something's going on, whether you want to tell us or not.
Right.
Okay, we get it. But then you can't get upset when we sort of speculate or come up with our own interpretation of what's going on.
That's all you're leaving us.
Exactly.
To.
Absolutely. So
you're not giving us any other opportunities.
I mean, and you know, the fans, they come there, they pay the money, and they cheer on this team. And his product has been great. They do deserve an answer for a guy that's making $6-7 million per year.
He is the third highest paid offensive player on the team, tied with Philip Forsberg at $6 million, behind only Matt Duchene, who also may be a part of this whole entire thing.
Yeah,
because Matt Duchene and the Nashville Predators
the guy that had been warning.
They were wanting that guy all along, and you end up with Kyle Turris, and maybe there's an element of Kyle Turris going, well, man, you guys always wanted this guy, and then you bring him in, and. So again, but again, this is all speculation, and we don't have any other information to go on because the coaching staff will not give away anything about what's happening. And listen, you can't ask a front office to give away information about a player via trade because then you're undercutting his trade value, right? Like you can't. That's the issue here. Is you know, my biggest question was there a disconnect when they traded for Kyle Turris between the coaching staff and the general manager? That's what I want to know. I want to know when they walked into the office and they said, hey, Peter Laviolette, we have acquired Kyle Turris in a trade. I want to know what Peter Laviolette thought. And we will probably never know
what he
thought in that situation. Chris Mason, when we come back, when it comes to your internet, good enough doesn't cut it. Xfinity Internet, internet's better because it streams better. Yeah, you heard that right. Introducing Xfinity Flex, a personalized streaming dashboard that puts all your favorites in one place. So they're not scattered across a bunch of apps. It's searchable with your voice. So all you have to do is say, play romantic comedies, and it plays romantic comedies. Plus, it has over 10,000 free shows and movies. Search less and watch more with the voice-controlled streaming device that's made for you. It's not just easy, it's effortless. And now it's included with Xfinity Internet for no additional cost. That's simple, easy, and awesome. Get Xfinity Internet for $20 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement and add a Flex 4K streaming device for no additional cost. It's two amazing services for the price of one. Go to Xfinity.com/Flex. That's Xfinity.com/Flex. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit an Xfinity store today. Offer ends 1-7-20. Restrictions apply. New performance starter internet customers only. Equipment taxes and fees extra and subject to change after term. Regular rates apply. See Mace when we come back. Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Braden Gall. Chris Mason joining us here on the show. Predators win 3-2 in shootout fashion last night over the St. Louis Blues. That's two games in a row, 4 points critical there. C-Mace, number one, what has been the difference between this team's six-game losing streak, 8 out of 9, stumbling there for a couple of weeks, and then the way they've played the last two games against St. Louis? What has been the biggest difference in your opinion?
Honestly, one of the biggest things I think is that, and I'm taking from what Peter Laviolette said after the first game against St. Louis, is their decision making. I think during that losing streak, I think they would do a lot of good things, and offensively, I think they put up a lot of numbers. They get some scoring chances. Maybe they'd outchance the other team by quite a large margin and end up on the wrong side. And some of those games they'd get smoked, like against the Chicago game there, but. But, you know, lately they've been doing a better job with having numbers back, not being too aggressive, not getting four guys caught in the offensive zone trying to create offense. Their transition game, in turn, has been better because of it. So they have numbers back in the neutral zone. They've been stronger there, and they get a lot of offense that way, and they're not giving up nearly as much. You know, you're going to play St. Louis, top team, one of the top teams in the league, they're going to get their chances. But if you play strong defensively, like the Blues do, you know, you can come out, because I think the Preds are faster. And then confidence. They look like they've got so much more swagger than they did during that losing streak. Even at the start of it, it just didn't quite feel like that was the team that we're used to seeing, and that was their identity. So I think that in hand with discipline, they stayed out of the penalty box, took a few penalties, but you know, nothing like we saw before. So I liked everything, and then you're getting good goaltending.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. First, I wanted to, because I got a chance to see Willie, I think, day before yesterday, before you guys left for St. Louis. It might have been last week. And I commended him on how you guys are doing such a great job, you and him, on air at breaking down a game, or, you know, play by play. You guys do a wonderful job. It keeps me, you know, in tune. It keeps me in the know, the way you guys sort of break down the game as it's going on. So I want to say, you know, kudos to you and Willie for that. I don't know if you guys ever get that throughout the day, but you two guys do a great job. And I want to say kudos to you and thank you, because it makes the game easier to follow when I'm watching you guys. So I wanted to get that out the way first.
You just made my day, buddy.
Oh, well,
has it quieted the kids down at least?
Well, yes. And so I'm cutting up toast as I'm doing this.
But nice.
I appreciate
great.
That, DB.
Nice.
Honestly, that's our goal that every time we go to, is just try to, and especially for me, I'm just learning the best way to educate fans and try to have fun and, you know, represent the Preds the best we can.
Absolutely. Now, it seemed like yesterday, last night, they had good puck movement. I thought that was the same really this past weekend. They had good puck movement. They played better defense. It may have sort of compromised a little bit of what they do offensively, because they didn't score as many goals. But I think if you're going to win 2-1, you would rather it be that than lose giving up nine goals. Have you seen it sort of that way, the good puck movement, at least the last two games, and them really paying attention to what's going on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point, because I think because of their details in their defensive side of things, you know, sometimes, you know, you're struggling, you go along and you're playing all these different teams. You think it's going to be, you know, you're coming against the St. Louis Blues. They've just been tearing everybody up. I mean, until they played the Preds, they were 7-1-2. They just blew Calgary out of the water. And, you know, you're kind of thinking, oh, no, this is the last thing the Predator, or the last team the Preds need to be facing right now because of what's going on. And all of a sudden, in a way, it's kind of a galvanizing thing. But I think the way that they committed to the defensive game helped them with their ability to move the puck up the ice, because they're back in position and they would catch the Blues coming forward. They would turn pucks over either in the neutral zone or just over the blue line. Then they would go back the other way and they would catch St. Louis, you know, moving forward, and they would catch them. And they ended up, you know, in turn spending a lot more time in St. Louis's end than the Preds' end. You know, the Blues obviously pushed back in the third period, but that game, I think Jake Allen, you know, he played a heck of a hockey game. If it weren't for him, I think the Preds would have blew St. Louis out of the water in the second period. But the puck movement, it was definitely better. And again, that's chalk that up to decision making as well. And that's not taking unnecessary chances offensively. If you think you have a, you know, a 50-50 or a 40-60, instead of going for that chance, you sit back and you live to fight another day, wait back in the neutral zone, get your opportunity, cut St. Louis off, and then go back and ram it down their throat. So I thought they were much more methodical, which led to, I thought, great puck movement, being able to spread out the Blues' defense.
Chris Mason joining us here, Preds TV analyst on Fox Sports, and obviously Preds win last night 3-2 in a shootout over the St. Louis Blues, two straight wins over the defending Cup champs. And Chris, listen, St. Louis plays a heavy game. They like to throw elbows, knock Grimaldi into the boards a little bit here and there. They like to do that. That's how they play. And I think a lot of teams are going to play like that against this Nashville Predators team until they show that they can take it. And certainly they've done that the last couple of nights. Some of that is, it also cost them Victor Arvidsson in the process, but some of that is the guys they've called up, Olivier and Daniel Carr, both guys that don't mind playing in the dirty areas. Did you see this team playing better in front of the net on offense the last two nights?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, again, going to play against a team like St. Louis, you're not going to get scoring chances if you don't go to that area. And I think they knew that. And I feel like at the beginning of the year, I feel everyone was doing it. You know, there's always the guys that will go there, Bonino, Arvidsson, when he's in the lineup. They'll always do it, but there's and Sissons. But there's other guys that don't always do it. And I think in order for a team to be successful, especially in the playoffs, if you want to have success there, or, you know, during tough times like right now in the regular season, you have to go to the net and you have to pay a price. You're going to get hurt. You're going to, you know, you're going into Colton Parayko, 6'6", 240 pounds, and he's going to be all over you. But when you go there, and if you go in numbers, you can outnumber them at the net, and it just causes complete chaos. And I think, you know, when the Predators do that, every time they do that, it seems they have success as a team, you know, not just the one or two or three usual suspects of guys that do that. And, you know, you got that the Bonino line with Smith and Grimaldi, and, you know, going down the wings, Smith and Grimaldi flying down the wings. Those guys are fearless. And Grimaldi going up against Parayko, might as well just skate through his legs. But he probably could, actually, but he's not, you know, he doesn't back down. And those guys play with heart, and then Nick Bonino is such a good net front guy. And even if they're not scoring goals, they're wearing teams down, and they're playing in the offensive zone, and it pays dividends. But I think that's another great point. The last two games, I think the team has been committed to doing those things, and not the three or four guys, everybody.
Yeah, and Grimaldi going up against Pietrangelo every shift is hilarious, too. It's just like he doesn't care. He's not scared at all. Chris Mason joining us here, which leads me to our final question, of course, and I get it. It's a really tough situation. I understand all of that. Is, in your opinion, just as a hockey analyst, in your opinion, is that the part of the game that Kyle Turris needs to develop to earn his way back into the starting lineup? Is that net front, that physicality, that stuff we're talking about right now, is that the thing that could be keeping him out of the lineup if you had to guess?
I mean, it's possible. You know, that's an element. I think if Kyle's not going to be playing on, you know, the top two lines, it's tough to justify him as a, you know, as a checking type of a player. And, you know, I don't know, you know, this whole situation and how it's going to play out, but I don't you know, think that having him on a checking line, they tried to do that, is really, it's fair to him because his skill set is more offensive. I don't know the exact reason, but you're playing against a certain team like St. Louis where you need that element, I think, of grit and size. Nashville Predators are one of the smallest teams in the NHL, and St. Louis probably one of the biggest teams. So I think if you're trying to devise a game plan and put a lineup together to combat what they have, I think you need that grit and size to compete with it, and I think it was very effective. You know, the lineups that they put out there and the way that they played. So, you know, obviously we'll monitor the situation there, but I think, you know, to play against the St. Louis Blues, that was something that was, you know, probably considered, was the size and physicality of those games.
And hard to argue with the results, 4 points against the defending champs. Chris Mason, always a pleasure, man. Thank you, man. Have a great holiday.
Okay, thanks, guys. Take care.
Yep.
Absolutely there. And you can even hear it in his voice there. It's just a tough situation right
now. Yeah, it is.
And nobody really knows what's going on. Again, there's lots of different conversations with Kyle Turris. What do we do going forward? Who's to be blamed for all of this? Why is it? How did it get to this point? Who disagreed on what? There's a million questions. But number one, a separate discussion is, does he help you win games today? And in the last two games, they went 2-0. They beat the Blues, and they went with more grit and more sandpaper and more jam, whatever you want to call it. And Daniel Carr scored the game-winning goal in a shootout. So you can question the decision if you want to, but they picked up 4 points in the process. Now let's see what happens moving forward as they play teams that maybe are more finesse teams, more skilled teams, more speed teams. Let's see what happens then, and let's see what happens with Kyle Turris. Ongoing Kyle Turris saga.
Yeah, it's ongoing, and, you know, hopefully we will, you know,
you think we're going to learn something?
Privy to, you know, what's truly going on pretty soon here.
I don't know about that.
with Kyle Turris, because these are not the only two games he was benched, right?
No, he had one. I think he had one other one against Vancouver on Thursday night.
Yeah,
it makes sense against that. You can argue, like CMA said, and I agree. Again, mm-hmm. it's a separate discussion. Does he help you beat St. Louis tonight? And you could argue Daniel Carr was the better option last night.
Yeah.
The question is, now what do you do? If he's not the better option, and that is the reality of the situation, what do you do?
Because you're going you're going everywhere else to get help.
Right.
Instead of right there.
And then not telling
us
why. The
guy you're paying $6 million to.
Yep. Fans are going to keep asking the question, boys. It ain't going to stop. It's going to keep coming. So, but if the Preds keep winning, does anyone care?
Yeah. After a while, they keep winning. After a while.
There you go.
The noise is going to start to get muted.
There you go. Morning Drive, Big Finish when we return.
We've had a big show. And now it's time for a Big Finish on Morning Drive.
All right, boys, I'll turn my microphone on there.
Yeah, it works when you turn
better.
Your mic on.
It works better when I turn it on. All right, boys, it's that time of the day, and it's time for the Daily Rewind. Welcome to the show, Morning Drive, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson hanging out here on a Tuesday. Happy Thanksgiving week. Can I say that now, guys? Am I allowed to say that? Happy Thanksgiving? Can I say that? It's my favorite holiday. I don't know where your guys' favorite holiday is, but it's my favorite holiday. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to the Preds.
They gave a thanks whooping. Oh, you like that, huh? St. Louis, the last two games. But, I mean.
Is that like jerk chicken?
Kind of, sort of. Yeah, a little spicy. a little overcooked, but good. What I was impressed by with the Predators last night.
3-2 win over St. Louis.
3-2
in the shootout,
overtime, shootout. They had their chances in Overton, the actual overtime, away the game. They had a bunch of chances. They kept it on the Blues end of the ice, it seemed like, for the majority of the overtime.
It feels like Peter Laviolette has gone to a larger, more physical group with Matthew Olivier, and then they call up Daniel Carr, who plays on the second line last night, who ends up getting the game-winning goal. But Kyle Turris is benched. He's a healthy scratch again on the night that Victor Arvidsson is first missing from the lineup, and you don't go to the $6 million fourth or fifth highest paid player on the team who's sitting on the bench. You go to Daniel Carr instead. And the debate, there are many of them, but it's hard to argue that it didn't pay off, because in the shootout, when you needed a goal to win the game, guess who was standing there with the puck on his stick? Daniel Carr, the guy who got called up instead of putting Kyle Turris in the lineup. He's the one making the big play in that spot. He was active around the net a couple of different times. He was willing to go into the dirty areas a few times, and I think that is what Peter Laviolette is looking for. I think the fans deserve an answer. When the third highest paid skater playing when they're injured,
right. But it's not reassuring to Kyle Turris that, you know, like, what is going on?
Kyle's not
Turris,
happy right now.
He might know the real reason. Lavi and Poile know the real reason. But to not give an explanation other than, you know, he just went in the lineup and made a lineup. It makes this story bigger than what it should be.
Listen,
if you just come out and say, hey, listen, Kyle's not playing. He's not doing the things that we need him to do defensively.
Or just, hey, we need to be more physical in front of the net right now. Hey, we're in a losing streak. We're trying to kickstart the offense. There's a million different, like, non-answers that you could give us that aren't this standoffish, that aren't this sort of closed off. Floyd Reese joining us here.
It's difficult because what you're balancing out is, okay, he's changed systems, he's changed cities, he's had time to sit and watch and analyze and maybe figure out what exactly he can do and do well. Is that the advantage we're seeing here? You know, is he better in our system than he was in Miami? And I think you have to take all that in consideration, because like you said, the worst thing you can do is, you know, you got two options. You let him go, maybe the worst thing you could do, you go ahead and sign him to a big long-term contract or semi-long-term contract, and you're stuck with that, and you end up with what you saw in Miami. So it is not easy. I don't envy them at all.
John Michael Vincent covering the Indianapolis Colts from 1070 The Fan.
You can write a really good book about what's transpired around him in the past 8 months, and we don't know it all. Like, I can give you a great example. What in the world's going on with Eric Ebron? Eric Ebron looked fine after the game on Thursday night. He didn't want to talk to anybody, but he looked fine. And then you fast forward 4 or 5 days. I don't want to call out anybody's toughness or anything like that. And I know that if you're sick of dealing with it, you go ahead and bail. And if it's a business decision, it's a business decision. But I think there's a huge storyline behind the fact that he was placed on IR yesterday. And Frank Reich didn't say as much, but even in answering the question about him, did not seem too happy. So there's some weirdness going on. I don't know if it's frustration of a season that could have been, if you get some kicks, if you play better against bad teams or what, but there's some frustration floating around here.
Is that not some Pink Floyd style psychedelic rock right there?
Man, that's talking to me. I don't
you
know
like
what
that?
It's saying, but it's talking to me.
See, that's Sturgill now at night.
It's talking to me. Whatever it's saying something.
You falsely accused other artists of being Sturgill in the past.
Yeah.
But this one
but
is.
That was Sturgill.
That's the one that gets you right
there. Yeah, that one. It said something to me.
Get you
I don't
your,
know what it
sweet,
said. Yeah.
Sweet spot.
It says something.
Josh Ward joining us here from WNML and Morning Drive.
When Tennessee was 0-2 and when Tennessee had lost to Florida 34-3, I think a lot of us were questioning, hey, is this team going to stick together? Is this team going to continue to fight? Or is this team going to fold? And I don't think we were wrong to question that, because I think Jeremy Pruitt wondered if that was going to happen. That's why he had that team meeting after the loss to Florida, because he challenged them and said, hey, we still have a chance to save this season, but here's what we need to do to make it happen. And he's talked about that publicly now, and I think over the last few weeks he's made it clear that was a big point in the season, and everything was not fixed immediately, but there was a difference in the way Tennessee looked when it came out against Georgia. The end result was still really disappointing, but the veterans, the way that they have led, that's a big part of it as well, because in that meeting, Jeremy Pruitt looked to the older guys and said, hey, you've got to lead the way, and Daniel Batuli, Nigel Warrior's been a better player, Daryl Taylor, Garen Tano, Trey Smith, who's a junior, but maybe the best player on the team. They all stepped up. Juwan Jennings, of course, Marquez Callaway, and helped lead Tennessee to this point.
To a lot of wives, it's irresistible. You know, it's like, you know, as soon as there's something plastic that belongs in the kitchen, which in my mind, few things could be more useless. Okay, then you mix the potato water with the flour and the milk and you're shaking it up. But as the hot air expands, the thing exploded. It got all over my shirt. And one, I was ticked off. She handed me, no, here. So I want to do it how I always do it, right? No, here, use this. I bought this. This is really good. No, this will make it a lot easier. Well, it's not that hard to begin with, so it doesn't have to be a lot easier. I put it in there. I shake it up. The thing explodes, goes all over my shirt. I went to the patio door. I took that thing and rifled it into the neighbor's yard. And the last time I saw that thing, it exploded on the side of the neighbor's house.
All right, it's Tuesday, and that means one thing, Derek.
Top 4 Tuesday.
If there's a little rain in Dallas, a little snow in Dallas, Jerry Jones comes down and say, oh, do you guys want to practice in the bubble today?
I'm sorry. You may hate Rob Gronkowski, but that was a great line. Ripping on Jera and the Cowboys needing to practice in the bubble. I thought that was hilarious. I don't care what you guys say.
Hey, Jera ain't going to take too much of that now.
Oh, Jason Garrett's done. He's gone.
Jared's going to call up to Fox and say, hey, listen.
He can't do anything about Gronkowski. If Gronkowski makes the money, he can't touch Gronkowski.
Hey, Jared's like, enough of that, all right? Yeah. We're America's team.
Yeah, Jared, you might be popular, but you're not
We're America's team. Yeah. Leave us alone.
You're powerful. You ain't that powerful.
Hey, big Jared's
world tycoon.
Jared's going to say, hey, Jared. Enough of that. Put somebody else on. Give me a Dallas guy. Get Witten back up there when he's done.
Yeah, I like your Texas redneck voice. I'm kind of a fan of
that. Damn that. Give me a Dallas guy. Put Emmitt Smith up there.
College football playoff rankings coming out tonight. Keep an eye on that. By the way, Tennessee Vols won last night on the hard court.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of that game.
My Spartans lost.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up.
Virginia Tech, I got to bring it up.
Tennessee did not look all that great last night against UTC, but defensively they're really good. My concern about Tennessee, here's my real quick take on Tennessee Vol basketball. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it's going to run through the post. It used to run through the post. It ran through the post. Grant Williams dominated. They get him the ball down low. Everything ran through them. Pons is having a great start to the season, but they do not have a guy they can depend on down low yet. They need to see what happens in that department. Very good defensive team, though.
Yeah, and you don't know how this thing is going to shake out once they get into conference play. They might build up enough to whereas, you know, they start clicking on all cylinders and they play better than what many expect within the conference.
Aren't they going to play? Don't they play Memphis?
Vandy was winning. I don't know if they won. I checked the score at halftime. They were winning by a few points.
I did not see that one.
They won 78-70.
Okay, they end up winning. So, you know, Vandy's another team where, okay, they're doing well now, but you just don't know how they're going to do once they get in league play. Yes, Memphis does play UT pretty soon here.
Coming up next week. Or no, two weeks. I just wonder about, and they also play Wisconsin.
Florida State. Would be back then? I think.
I don't think Wiseman's back until
Wiseman,
after.
He's not.
But what spurred me thinking about that is if they run up against a team with some really dynamic, lengthy, tall, big court, talented teams, front court guys, I don't know what their answer is because they were already a little undersized last year, but that's because Grant knew how to use his body and everything. That was my concern watching the game last night, was their offense is just a perimeter-based offense right now. And maybe that's just a one-game thing,
well,
but whatever.
Auburn was able to win games like that from the outside. Auburn was a damn good shooting team.
Yeah, and then when they weren't,
exactly,
they got beat. So.
Absolutely.
All right, boys. By the way, I am out tomorrow. Have a great time with your boy Corey. Have a wonderful holiday. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. It's my favorite day of the year. I'm going to spend some time with my kids and my wife and my family. So there you go. For Marquise, for Derek, my name is Braden Gall. Thanks for listening to Morning Drive, Tuesday edition.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, be safe. I love you.